listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up, Canes fans? It is the Forza Podcast, your number one source for Miami Hurricanes podcast. It is Thursday, September 17th. We are 2 days away from kicking Louisville's ass. As always, it is your boy, Marsh, and as always, I am joined by my co-host and wonderful producer, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, are you as fired up as I am? Are you confident? Are we happy today?
I'm fired up. I'm happy. I don't know about confident. I'm confident that I'm going to be hyped.
What they want. I mean, I got to give them positive Marsh today. So yeah. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling very good. I think this is going to be a very, very big game. It's a very big show. But let's talk some Tank Brewing before we get started.
Yeah. So we want to share a message from the Tank Brewing. They're one of our partners. So at the Tank Brewing Company, we're passionate about brewing the highest quality craft beer using only the best ingredients and brewing techniques in a process we call liquid innovation. If you're looking for the place to cheer on the Canes this season and enjoy exceptional craft beer, look no further than the Tank. The big screens in our 6,500 square foot tasting room were made to watch your team dominate and can be viewed just as well from our outside area. With 16 taps in the brewery, we guarantee you'll find the craft beer you've been craving. Hungry? We make some delicious bites that perfectly complement what you're sipping on. Mention that you heard about the Tank here on the Fours Up podcast, and you just might receive a token of our appreciation. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at The Tank Brewing for the latest news about our exceptional brews. We are proudly located in the heart of Miami at 5100 Northwest 72nd Avenue. Whether it's game day or any other day, we're always brewing up something delicious at the Tank.
All right. Perfect.
Yeah. Cool.
Go check them out. Loca, yep. I think is how you pronounce
right.
That. That was my favorite beer when I went over there and tried. So, I mean, they have some delicious beers. And the location is awesome. And once you step inside, it's like a damn fantasy world. It looks like it looks like Rob Dyrdek's Fantasy Factory. It's amazing. It's huge. Jordan and I got to get down there for a live recording one of these days.
Yeah. Yep. And make sure when you go down there, mention that you heard about the Tank here on the Fours Up podcast, and you just might receive a token of their appreciation is what they tell us. So drop by and let them know that you heard about it here on the Fours Up podcast, please. That'd be a huge help to me and Marsh as well. Just so the Tank is happy with our partnership. So that would be fantastic, guys.
Absolutely. Okay. What about AB?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And don't forget our guys, Stickers by AB. AB is the dude. His stickers are unreal, man. I have a really cool, like big cooler that came with, the Ford truck that I bought last year. And, dude, I have a big old Orange Bowl sticker on the side. So.
I love it. Okay. We have a huge, we got two big guests coming on today to talk everything Miami and Louisville, but a new segment we are coming out with. As you all know, if you followed me on Twitter, I like to bet on sports. I have that crippling disease. I've been doing it since I was like 12 years old. I remember my dad's buddies would always call me during middle school and say, "Hey, who do you like for this weekend?" And ever since then, I've been hooked. And last week, I went 4-2. So Uncle Marsh is back. And so cool. From now on, Jordan and I, we are going to give you some picks that we like for the upcoming games this weekend. So
yeah.
Go first, brother.
So I'm like pretty I only bet NFL. I don't, you know, just me personally, I'm not a college guy. In terms of sports betting, just because it's so unpredictable and, you know, I'm kind of conservative in nature. So I feel like this is a great week to bet on the NFL, though. I have five games that I absolutely love. And then one that I've been thinking about. The one that I've been thinking about, very tempting, is the Bengals plus six tonight on Thursday. However, you know, rookie quarterback Joe Burrow, I'm not sure that I'm going to do that one. But these other five I feel really good about. I dropped the screen that had – I have my picks. I just can't remember the teams they're playing. Okay, so the first one that I have, and this is my – like, this is my favorite for the week. I have the Seattle Seahawks minus four at home versus the New England Patriots. I absolutely love this pick. Like, I don't feel like the Patriots are that good anyway. So the Seahawks minus four, I'm doing that all day. My next one is the Buffalo Bills minus 5.5 on the road against the Miami Dolphins. I'm a Bills fan. I thought they looked great. I don't trust the Dolphins right now.
Did I see Zach Moss score a touchdown?
You did. Yeah, Zach Moss scored the first touchdown of their season. So,
all right, go Utes, go South Florida.
Yeah. Okay, then my next pick, I also just love this one, man. If I had $1 million to put on this, I totally would. Where is it? It is the Minnesota Vikings plus three over the Indianapolis Colts. And I don't know who in the world thinks that Phillip Rivers, the noodle arm, should be favored in any game ever, because, like, I can throw a deep ball better than him at this point. Like, he's just terrible. So I'm taking the Vikings plus three. I have the Green Bay Packers minus six over the Detroit Lions. I feel like the Lions' entire season just, like, vaporized when DeAndre Swift dropped that pass.
Like, that was painful.
You could see Matthew Stafford's soul leave his body when that happened. I felt really bad for the guy. And then my last one is I'm going with the Kansas City Chiefs minus 8.5 over the Los Angeles Chargers. I feel like Pat Mahomes versus Tyrod Taylor is all I have to say there. So yeah. 8.5 points is great.
All right. Are those your picks?
Those are my picks. And, you know, I feel absolutely great about the Seattle minus four and the Minnesota plus three.
All right. Okay. I got a big slate this weekend. Okay. I'm taking Baylor minus four against Houston. Why? I don't know. It just feels right. I'm taking App State minus 4.5 against Marshall. I don't know why. It just feels right. FAU plus 1.5 versus Georgia Southern. I didn't even know Georgia Southern had a D1 football team, and somehow they're favored against Willie Taggart, the Willie train, and the Owls are going to run all over Georgia Southern's ass. I got the Vikings plus three against the Colts. I don't know who made that pick. I don't know what the hell Vegas is thinking. I don't know if someone isn't going to play, but that is preposterous. I got the – oh, God, this kills me. I got my Cowboys. Got the Cowboys. I'm a big Cowboy fan, everyone. I got a minus 4.5 against the Falcons. I don't want to talk about it. I don't know why I did it, but –
I almost went with the Falcons plus four, but
– Yeah. I don't know why I did it. I got Joey big game Burrow plus 8.5 tonight against the Browns. Screw the Browns. I hate Baker Mayfield. And then I got the Packers minus 6.5 against the Lions. So
cool.
You influenced me on the Colts and the Packers. And I think I went 1-6 my first weekend, and then I went 4-2 last weekend. So I'm trending up.
I just don't understand. Dude, I am baffled by that Minnesota-Indianapolis line. The Colts lost to the freaking Jags last week, dude.
No one loses to the Jaguars ever.
I know. At least the Vikings lost to a good team.
Yeah. Their defense looked pretty bad. But
yeah.
It's the Colts. Like, it's not like Phillip Rivers is gonna go off for whatever. Like, he's like old. Go get a stretcher, old man.
Oh, dude. I mean, I think they should set the over-under on how many balls he's, like, how many out routes he's just going to turf. he just can't even get the ball to the sideline anymore.
Yeah, it's I think that could be an ugly game. But what do you say, let's get our first guest on the line.
Cool. Let me dial him in real quick.
Hello?
Matt, what's going on, brother?
What's up, you guys?
Nothing. How you doing, man?
So we now welcome on Matthew from Kane's Insight. Kay, I got a question for you. On your Twitter, it says you're in Hollywood, Florida. Are you a Hollywood man?
I am a Hollywood man, born and raised.
What the hell? What up, brother? Okay, well, let's just talk about that real quick. Where'd you grow up in Hollywood?
Hollywood Hills, right next to Chaminade, about a block away.
Okay, I played my first Little League football for the Hollywood Hills Red Raiders.
Well, that's a dominant program.
Is it?
I mean, no, not really.
hey, and so give me your favorite restaurants from Hollywood. Because, dude, that's my home. We still have our house there. I'll be moving there here in a few months. And so, because I have opinions on restaurants in Hollywood. I got to hear your favorites.
Well, I think Shenanigans takes the cake for me. That's been my favorite restaurant since really as long as I can remember, man. Just everything about that. Just, you know, playing pool and watching Heat games and eating wings. Like, that's just what I remember, man. It's great.
Yeah. Okay. All right. What about, have you been to Villa Rose Pizza?
I have. That's great pizza. I think that's probably as good as it gets. Best I've had in Hollywood, at least.
Yeah. Absolutely. Morrow's is good too in downtown Hollywood. But yeah, I saw the Hollywood thing. I just had to ask, man, because I feel like most Kane's Twitter, they're more Dade County. They're more, you know, grew up in Miami, things like that. But whenever I see a Hollywood guy, I gotta talk to him about it.
It's a select few. We gotta stick together.
We're a very elite group. Okay, so let's talk Kane's football, man. How are you feeling going into Saturday? Because Jordan and I think I'm a little less nervous, but I'm very nervous for this game. I just really like Louisville's offense. I think we were sloppy at times against UAB, and Oddshark just has us as 2.5-point underdogs to Louisville. So how are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic about what I saw. The thing with the odds is, which what I saw is Vegas put us at the beginning as a 1.5-point favorite, and it swung immediately to Louisville. They're all the way up to 2.5 now. So that tells you the public is much higher on Louisville than Vegas is. Yeah. Depends on what they know. Louisville's a strong team. So the biggest thing is they're going to score points. It's just try to limit the big play as much as you can. And you know what? You got to score points on your own. Maybe I'm just underestimating them because of how well we played against them last year. But I think that we match up pretty well on the offensive side with our style of football and our running attack because I think that we honestly went up against a better front seven last week and we were able to impose our will there. So I think we'll be able to stick to what we want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so my biggest concern, and I think Jordan and I are pretty we agree on this. Our biggest concern for this weekend is the secondary, mostly the cornerbacks. Yeah. Christian Williams enters the transfer portal. I don't know why. honestly, you know, good best of luck to him. But I mean, they got speed, man. They got Tutu Atwell. They got Hawkins at running back. Who's they're gonna run sideline to sideline. How do you feel about? And obviously, DJ Ivy had some spotty moments last week against UAB. So how do you feel with the Canes secondary and defense as a whole going up against a very explosive, very fast Louisville offense?
Yeah, I think that, the secondary does concern me. What gives me hope is that I think that the defensive line can overpower the offensive line of Louisville. I don't think that they're very good, but yeah, the secondary is a concern just because of the speed that they present and the struggles that we've seen there. My biggest thing is what happens when they do go 4 and 5 wide. Are we going to throw freshmen out there? Are we going to go and play 2 strikers, 3 safeties? Who knows? Because when you start adding, an Amari Carter as your third safety or Keontra Smith and Gilbert Fryerson out there at the same time, like, yeah, those guys are defensive backs, but those guys aren't sticking with Tutu Atwell. So it's a concern. I think they're going to have to get creative on defense, throw some zones at them, throw some different looks at him, try to get under Cunningham's skin a little bit with what he's seeing, because he's a guy that, is not the most accurate in the world. So if you make him try to throw, think while he's throwing instead of just playing freely, I think you could there could be some plays to be made in the secondary, but I think it's going to have to be a creative performance on defense. As far as the secondary goes, I want to keep it simple up front.
Yeah, well, so that's kind of a question. You brought up a great point where, I mean, I didn't even think about – I've been so panicked about this. I didn't even think if they run four or five wide, we're really screwed then. But one thing that I was thinking is if you could kind of go through the matchups, like would you take Tutu Atwell or their wide receiver core, or would you take our cornerbacks? Or would you take their running back – I can't think of his name right now – versus – yes. Yes, Javion Hawkins. Would you take him, or would you take our linebacker core with Bradley Jennings and Zach McLeod, who, I mean, mixed reviews, in my opinion, from their week one performance? I'm just worried about both of those matchups, man.
Yeah, the linebackers concern me against Hawkins, but I think it would be a lot more of them being aided by the defensive line because of the zone running scheme that they run. So if you get some penetration, like if Nesta Silvera has a type of game this week that he had last week where he's getting penetration and making plays in the backfield, you could kind of get him off schedule a little bit. But there's like the guys just got to stay in their proper gaps against this style of run, because if not, it could get ugly. The thing, I don't think that if McLeod and Jennings are the starters, I think, you know, running outside the tackle worries me because those guys don't really have great speed. No, you know, Sam.
They are kind of slow, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
Like I rewatched it. Sorry to cut you off, Matt, but rewatching the game from last week, it was pretty apparent and evident that McLeod and Jennings don't have that level of speed. Jennings is a very good tackler, and I think he led the Canes in tackles, but you know, do you want to see a guy like Sam Brooks out there more?
Hey, Matt, can you hear us now?
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened there.
All right, you're all good. You're all good. So I was talking about the you were talking about the linebackers, and, you know, I'm concerned about McLeod and Jennings' speed. I'm very confident in those guys' – well, I'm not very confident in Zach McLeod as a tackler. I think Bradley Jennings is a solid tackler. But do you want to see, you know, a guy like Sam Brooks out there starting, or just in general more on the field?
Yeah, I want to see Brooks on the field a lot more, because I think that this – I think he, of all the linebackers you have, I think he matches up the best against this style of run where you need to going to cover a lot of ground, because they're going to be, you know, running the outside zone, playing off the tackle a lot. Like, you need someone that can just cover a lot of ground with his feet, and they don't have the most physical offensive line that's really going to overpower him and take advantage of his lack of size. I think that Sam Brooks – I think he's got to play a lot more in this game than he did even last week, and he played about as much as the other guys. I think he should be the primary linebacker.
I don't disagree with you, man, because this is going to sound so bad to me, but I feel like a lot of people were very hyped about McLeod coming back, and he's great for the locker room. He's great, you know, when it comes to leadership and just, you know, maturity and being a veteran there. But I mean, the first few plays against UAB, you know, it was missed tackles and things like that. So that's a big concern to me. How do you think – were you pleased with the play of the defensive ends last week? And really the defensive line. I mean, Jalen Phillips and Quincy Roche. I think Roche had a sack, and the other guys, you know, their stats won't, you know, shock you. But I thought they were very effective. I thought Nesta played very well. What were your thoughts on the defensive line?
Yeah, I thought Nesta had a great game, probably the best game of his career, in my opinion, just because of the consistency in the way that he was dominating. It wasn't just, you know, splash plays occasionally. It was really a consistent all-around performance. As the defensive ends, I thought the defensive end played really well. I thought they were setting the edge really well. Like, you weren't seeing a lot of runs breaking outside, you know, losing containment. There was only one sack between the two of them, but they were hitting that guy a lot. They were getting a lot of pressures. And, I mean, they were getting the ball out in two and a half seconds max. Like, they were not – like, the defensive ends, they knew about them, and it seriously limited the playbook because they did not trust their tackles to hold up. So the stats might not have been there, but it affected UAB a lot.
Okay, well, I'd like to switch sides of the ball now and talk about the Hurricanes offense a little bit. What did you think about our receivers? Like, that was the one position group on offense that, I mean, I guess that's the only one that I'm worried about coming into this matchup. I wouldn't say that our offensive line performed great in pass blocking scenarios last week. I honestly think, you know, if we had like Cozy or Jaren Williams or, you know, a non-mobile quarterback like De'Eriq King, I think we probably would have been sacked four or five times at least, you know, as opposed to the, only the two that De'Eriq King took. So I'm not terribly worried about our line, though I wish we would get better. But the receivers is what I'm worried about, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on them.
Yeah, I have some of the same thoughts on the offensive line. Like, they don't worry me as much as the receivers. And I think Jakai Clark starting, getting someone that smart, you know, a former center, someone who practiced all fall camp at center, is going to be big for them. So they don't – it doesn't worry me as much. I mean, the receivers, they've worried me since even before the UAB game. In our preview article over at Canes Insight, like I said, they worry me more than the offensive line, because I don't see a whole – I just don't see it with these guys. Like, they're not able to get, you know – create separation against man-to-man coverage, and not, you know, there's no true number one receiver that, you know, third and eight, you know, you're throwing to this guy. If anyone, that's Brevin Jordan, but, you know, he didn't even have a huge impact on the game last week either. Like, there's just, I don't see a real threat in the passing game, that, and that worries me. I'd like to see Jeremiah Payton take another step. I'd like to see, you know, maybe someone like Michael Redding come in and get more snaps, because he's got that number one receiver, you know, type of physicality and athleticism. But the guys that we have now, I mean, Wiggins was probably the best and he had a pretty good game, but I mean, that's not really someone that I think you can rely on consistently to get open and make plays. And yeah, it's a concern.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Marsh and I are we're the conductors of the D Wiggins bandwagon. And honestly, I was a little underwhelmed. Like you said, it was a solid performance. I just kind of hoped that he'd have a breakout year and really establish himself as like a playmaker. You know, we'll see if that happens down the line, but it certainly didn't happen against UAB. When I talk to people, most of the names that I'm hearing when I talk about the wide receivers are guys, like you said, it's mostly Payton and Redding, and it's mostly people that are saying like, oh, just wait, these guys will come up big later. And that's a huge red flag to me, because those guys have no game experience. They're all potential. And it's pretty much just like admitting that our current wide receiving core is not good enough. You know, so when I talk to people, they're like, oh, just wait, Michael Redding will be great. It's like, well, oh, I mean, he barely gets on the field. So that's horrifying, honestly. You know, I just don't really, I don't know. I don't feel great about that wide receiver matchup. But I would love to hear your thoughts on De'Eriq King. Just to give mine really quick, I was absolutely enamored with him as a ball carrier. I mean, you could have told me that was Kyler Murray on that 3rd-and-7 play where he did the half spin into the defensive tackle, then half spin back out, and then runs for 20 yards. I just couldn't even believe it. I'm not too worried about his deep balls, honestly. I feel like that's the type of thing that can, you know, as we get settled in, he gets a little more comfortable with the new team and offense and receiving core. Like, I feel like the deep balls will come, but I'd love to hear your analysis on King.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about the deep balls either. Really, his passing ability doesn't worry me that much either. Like, we know it's there. We've seen it before. That doesn't go away just because you didn't have a great, you know, first game pass in the ball statistically, especially on the deep balls. Like, he has the ability. It's there. You know, I think his stat line probably looks a little different, too, if he connects on that gimme to Payton that he missed. I think overall, to miss on as many deep balls as you did and still complete 65% of your passes is impressive. We've been nowhere near that the past few years. We've been, you know, hovering in that like 52-53% completion range. That's a huge improvement. I think that as the chemistry comes along with the receivers, you know, we'll see more of that. Like, Harley was open. Like, he created separation on that play that King missed him. So that's a positive sign. See, downfield. And I also think that he's going to have more opportunities to make plays as we open up the playbook more. You know, it was pretty clear that they were content with just running the ball last week. The only time you really saw them open up the playbook was in the third quarter, when he made most of his, you know, passing yardage was in that third quarter. You know, they opened it up a little bit. They got Brevin more involved. I think that's what the offense is probably going to look more like, and I think that that is going to help his stats, which is going to calm people down. But I think he played pretty well overall.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it was two drives or just the one drive in the third quarter that, man, that is what we've been waiting for. Like, that kind of drive, the high tempo and, you know, short passes. I know that they got one to Harley, and he scooted for a first down. Brevin Jordan had a few catches on those drives. And what is one or two things that you want to see more of from the Canes offense against Louisville? I mean, for me, it's, you know, I'd say one is getting Brevin more involved and getting Will Mallory involved at all, because I think those are the two best pass catchers on this team. And then I want to see, you know, Cam Harris in the running game keep going. So what are two things that you want to see specifically from this Canes offense? And then we'll ask some recruiting questions.
Yeah, I think I really want to see them open it up a little bit more in the play action game and the RPO game, because if you're coming into this game and you're Louisville, you're looking at a team that just ran for 337 yards against a team that statistically was better against the run than you were last year. They're going to be selling out against the run. Let's hit some slants to Harley behind the linebackers when they crash down, because they're extremely aggressive in their front seven. That's how they make up for their lack of size. Their linebackers play extremely aggressive. So let's hit them on a play action. Let's hit them on an RPO and try to get some yardage that way. And I agree with you. I think you got to get the tight ends more involved, because they're such mismatches. Like, there's Louisville has nobody that can match up with either of those guys. Get them the ball in space. Let them run a little bit. Those would be my two big things.
Okay. Yeah, I think, I mean, to me, this is where you need a Rhett Lashley offense when you're competing against a team that has just as explosive, maybe even more explosive an offense than you do. So we need at least like 31 points. Before we get into recruiting, I want your prediction for this Saturday. You're honest. I need the prediction.
Yeah, I think high scoring game, play the over if you're going to bet on this, guys. I saw it started at like 59.5. I took that as soon as I saw it. I'm going to go, game comes down to the last, into the fourth quarter. I'm going to go 38-31 Miami.
Woo! Woohoo! I love it. That's good, man. Okay, all right, let's talk some recruit before we sorry, go ahead, Jordan.
No, you're fine. I'm itching to get – I've had this question loaded for a few days now, and I'm just itching to get it off my chest, if that's okay. Okay, so when it comes to recruiting, I really need to talk about the cornerback position. With Christian Williams leaving, this was kind of I've been complaining about this since day one on the podcast. I have said multiple times that – we lacked the talent and experience, and like the scariest of all is we lacked bodies at cornerback. We only had six guys on scholarship coming into the year. Only three of them had playing experience, at least as a cornerback. And now we lost a guy. Thankfully it wasn't one with playing experience. But we lost one. We're down to five scholarship cornerbacks. In our recruiting class, we only have two. We have Malik Curtis committed and Tim Burns Jr. But we don't have a lot of spots. You know, we have 21 commits. We have, I think, only 24 spots because of Isaiah Walker coming. That's going to make it really hard to get a grad transfer. And what if, like, Al Blades has a great season and leaves? I just don't even know what to do with this cornerback position from a recruiting standpoint. And honestly, I might be early, but I'm starting to panic a little bit thinking about it. So I'd love to hear your take on it, Matt.
Yeah, let's tackle all that, the roster issues, the recruiting issues. Let's get into it. I don't know if panic is the right word yet. I'm extremely concerned. I guess maybe one step down from panic. If we see an injury, then I'll probably be panicked. But right now, let's talk about Christian Williams real quick. Here's the thing with the way that recruiting is going. You know, the saying used to be, once a guy's committed, you can't stop recruiting him. You can't stop recruiting him until he signs. That's completely out the window with the transfer portal and the, you know, one-time transfer rule, which is just inevitable at this point. It's going to be passed at the end of this season. You can't stop recruiting these guys even when they're on your campus, you know. So
yeah.
It is just it is so hard from a roster management standpoint to try to plan where you're going to be. And you just, you gotta, I mean, you're in such a tight spot because if someone, you know, isn't showing that they deserve to play and then they get upset, like there's really nothing that you can do if they want to transfer. Yeah. It's just kind of the, where we are in college football right now. As far as the recruiting goes, you got the two guys right now. I think Tim Burns is a really talented guy and he's very fundamentally sound right now and he's very technical in his craft, but he just has limitations because of his size. I think he's listed at 5'10", which is inaccurate. He's 5'8", maybe 5'9", very short. You're talking about a guy who's not, he's not going to be able to play on the outside. I've seen some people say, oh, well, Ta'Cory Couch playing on the outside. Ta'Cory Couch is much longer. Tim Burns doesn't have that length. Like, he's going to strictly be a nickel guy. I don't see him on the outside. Malik Curtis is a guy who is a total project. So you're not, you know, you're not going to be able to rely on him next year. And the issue with these projects is, you know, there's no guarantee they're going to pan out and there's no guarantee they're going to stick around in time to eventually pan out. So, you know, it's not, you're not, it's not a great situation what you have committed right now in 2021. As far as the targets, Markavius Brown is the top guy. I think he's a talented guy, but I don't think he's a year one player necessarily. I think he would need more time. I could be wrong because we haven't seen a whole lot of him since his sophomore year. He didn't play much IMG last year. He was sitting behind those two five stars they had and didn't get a whole lot of playing time. We'll see what he does this year at IMG. Maybe he's good enough to come in and compete for playing time at some point in his freshman year because he will be an early enrollee. I'm outside of that, there's a couple flip candidates. You have Jaden McBurrows at St. Thomas, who's committed to Michigan. He's a talented guy, local kid. Ricardo Hallman at University School. Well, he was at University School. He transferred to another school because University School isn't playing this year. He's committed to Wisconsin. He kind of fits the mold more of what we're looking for at cornerback at 6 foot, where McBurrows is only 5'10". Kevin Knowles is at MacArthur. He's committed to Florida State. That's a guy who I like. And I could see them making a push at him late because right now you just need numbers. And then there's some other guys, if you really get desperate, that you could go after. As far as the number situation, where we are at 21 right now, and, you know, the hard limit sort of is 24, but just like you counted Jared Williams back this year, you could count guys back into the 2022 class if you just need numbers. And there's been talk of that, you know, being wiped out this year or because of COVID or maybe even being, you know, raised permanently. Like, there's been talk of that. So I don't think that you're as stuck at that 24 number as some people think. I think there's going to be flexibility.
So if you, I mean, technically, if we're speaking, we have two spots left. Right now, I want, so this is my last question for you. Give me your realistic opinion on who those last two players will be, and then who do you, I guess, like a fanboy, who would you want the last two players to be?
Ooh. I don't want to fanboy too hard because I do want to, you know, look at the roster management standpoint. I think Markavius Brown has become a must get in this class. So I think he has to be one of the two of them. And I think the last one has to be a quarterback. I'm a huge believer in taking a quarterback every single class. I don't think that it's something that is even negotiable because what happens if Tyler Van Dyke beats out Nikosi Perry next year? You know, he's gone. Peyton Matoka might say, hey, maybe I have no route of playing here. He's gone. Who knows what the hell Tate Martell is going to do? You could, you know, you could have one quarterback. Like, I think you need a quarterback this year. I think it's a must get. And you know, the name to know still is Jake Garcia. They are still recruiting him. Let's see where that one goes. Cause that one's not going to end anytime soon. No matter how many articles get put out there about, oh, Miami's still in it. Oh, Miami's out of it now. Oh, Miami's back in it. Like, they'll be in it till the end. Let's just see what happens.
Thank you. My God. Finally, someone with some sense.
I have to say, I just need to say this on the pod. If Mike Rumpf calls Steven Ortiz now at this point, I'm just gonna have to delete my Twitter account. I will go absolutely insane. I can't believe the situation that we're at with corner right now, man. It's frustrating because I thought before the season, like, only having six guys, I was like, okay, this just wasn't very good roster management. And now I don't know. We need to do something. I think you're right that Marquavius Brown is like a must get. And, you know, we have to look attractive for a guy like him, and that we're offering competition for a starting role on day one. I mean, it's not like DJ Ivy or Takori Couch have really cemented themselves opposite Al Blades. So I agree with you there, man. And I guess thanks for coming on, man. We really appreciate having you. You know, I love your 38-31 prediction against Louisville. I'm hoping you're right.
Yeah. And dude, Matt, whenever you want to come on again, bro, we'd love to have you. You're an awesome guest.
No doubt, man. Anytime.
All right, absolutely. Brother. Have fun in the good old 954 in Hollywood, man.
Will do, man. And see you when you get down here too, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Just a few more months. I'll see you there.
All right. See you later, guys.
All right. See you, bro.
Thanks, Matt.
Boom. Yeah.
Love it.
Those Canes Insight guys, they know their stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're good over there. Dude,
Are you feeling more confident?
He did a great job. He's made me feel as good as I could. Matt, that was a great job. Like, yeah.
38-31. I've changed my score prediction. I'll give it later at the show, but I think that's a little high, but okay. I like it.
Okay.
I like it a lot.
Can I just say though, like, I mean, I'll know just because of networking. I'll know if Rump reaches out to Stephen Ortiz, and you're gonna have to restrain me, Marsh, if that happens. I will freak out.
Bro, that was a great question, though, because I didn't even think about, like, recruiting and everything when it came to Christian Williams, you know, going into the portal. Like, if Jake Garcia isn't a go, and if – I mean, I don't want to reach for a quarterback, who's to say let's not go get two cornerbacks to close out this class?
Oh, we absolutely need to. I mean, honestly, I think we should be closer to 7 or 8. I know that we only play two in our standard defense and whatever, and that Stryker is kind of a third DB. But, I mean, like Matthew said, those Strykers don't have cornerback speed. I mean, we usually move them there from safety because they're bigger anyways, and it's usually our big safeties that go there. So, I don't know, man. No. I think we should have closer to 7 or 8 on the roster at all times, not 6, especially when half those dudes have never stepped foot on, you know, in like a meaningful game to play football. Like, it's just not acceptable.
Yeah. We'll have to, let's ask our next guest, that question. I think that's a perfect talking point. So, what do you say we get him on?
Yeah, I'll dial him in right now. Cam, what's up, man?
Yo, what's going on?
Boss man. How you doing, brother?
Yo, I'm hanging in there.
Good deal. Good deal. So we now welcome on my good friend, our good friend, Cam Underwood from State of the U. What's been going on, man? I saw you a few weeks ago, had a great night. We talked a lot of Entourage, not so much Canes, but I know Jordan was Jordan, you would have loved to be there.
Oh, yeah.
It was a great. We talked all seasons in depth, and it was.
Oh, man. That sounds
We didn't go that far with it, but we did hit some of the high notes.
Can
we just plan on that same type of thing when I finally make it down there, if COVID will go away? That I'd love to, you know, to just get some wings with you guys and talk Entourage and a little bit of Canes football. That'd be incredible.
No, man. I mean, I'm always down to bash a little Johnny Drama. I know that's Marsh's guy, but yeah, you know, exactly that reaction right there. You go, no.
You don't like Johnny Drama?
No, I don't really.
I didn't like him the first watch through. I didn't like him at all. But the second and third times I watched him, I thought he was one of the funniest characters.
I mean, he has his moments of hilarity. Don't get me wrong, but yeah. He's not one of my favorite characters, not at all.
I gotcha. If you had, sorry, I don't want to make this too Entourage-y because I'm already fired up. With our last guest, I was just about ready to have a tantrum thinking about this cornerback situation that we have. But who are your top three characters, if you wouldn't mind giving them to us?
I mean, number one is the GOAT, Ari Gold.
Duh. Okay, of course.
Like, I mean, if you have an Entourage conversation, you don't start with Ari, then there's something wrong with you. after Ari, I'm going to have to say Lloyd. I mean, because he was the foil to Ari through that, you know? So, like, that raised up his star turn in my eyes. And, like, you know, they were going through all those assistants for so long, and then the actor was actually doing such a great job. I think he got extended in that role, and then they kind of grew into what it ended up being. So that would be number two. And then number three, can I just say the parade of young ladies that Vince shared time with, like, all together as number three on the list? Is that am I able to do that? Because I'm breaking the rules, and I'm doing
Absolutely. As hell. Hell yeah, brother.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Okay, one more entourage question. Jordan and I agree on this. At the end of the show, were you sad or a little mad that Ari didn't end up with
Dana Gordon?
Dana.
Like, I love Mrs. Ari, and like
She was kind of an asshole. Like,
yeah, she's kind of a dick.
I mean, like, she was a normal person. She was a normal person married to Ari Gold, and that's gonna come off differently because, like, you expect all of Ari Gold's life to be Ari Gold, you know, like marching through the office with the paintball gun and stuff, you know, going to the house party at the beach, talking about the assistant Josh Weinstein, you know, like the whole. you expect that to be every moment, and Mrs. Ari and the kids are not that. But no, I thought that they were. I thought they were directing us that it was going to be Ari and Dana Gordon. And, like, I thought that was a good match. And, like, yeah, no, Dana Gordon was a babe, and she was definitely a strong character as well. So, yeah, I was a little taken aback that they didn't end up together. Not going to lie.
You know, that's a great point, because I've long felt that, you know, Marsh was right. But I guess in my own personal life it's progressed in certain ways that, like, now that you say that, I do kind of, like, you're right. You know, Mrs. Ari, I hated her when I was watching this show, but if you think about it, like, being married to somebody like Ari Gold would probably be miserable. Exactly, and it would probably turn you into a miserable person to be around.
Yeah, I mean, she did everything that she could to kind of make it work. Obviously, you know, they had all the therapists, you know, the iconic scene, you know, like, this is wife number one and therapist number five, and I don't care about anybody. You know, all kinds of things like that, but... sorry, I derailed that conversation, but I hope you guys enjoyed that. So let's talk some Canes, man.
Let's do it. Okay. So this Saturday is a big game. I know that, you know, with COVID, you know, some certain teams are out of it, but it feels like a big game to me. I mean, game day is going to be there. It's going to be Herbstreit and Fowler. Are you confident going into Saturday night, or are you a little optimistic?
I'm cautiously optimistic. But I'm approaching it still with, you know, the kind of respect that I think that Louisville's due. I know that we had a record-setting day against them throwing the ball last year. You know, Jaren Williams with 6 touchdown passes, which is a Miami Hurricanes record to this day because, like, we've only played a couple games since then and everything. And there are some things to like in terms of what Miami offers to go against what Louisville has. But – there's also the thing, and like we've talked about this, I've even talked about it, you know, the last time I was on with you guys. All of that being true, that there are things that are there to like about Miami, Miami's also failed to show up even with these kind of opportunities. I think I saw the stat on the timeline, the Bear from ESPN. He said, you know, Miami's 3-23 since 2005 on the road against ranked teams. That's objectively atrocious. You know, that's absolutely terrible. So even with things that, you know, I could say, hey, I like what we have versus what they offer on defense versus their offense or on offense versus their defense, we've still failed to show up in these opportunities and in these spots. So that's what's kind of balancing it out for me.
Yeah. Well, that's actually I thought of this while you were talking. And then, you know, that last point you made kind of drove it home. I would like if you guys could remind me if I can't think of any. You know, I had a tweet the other day where I said, I feel like in my lifetime as a Miami Hurricanes fan, which I really started paying attention to the program around 2006. It feels like in my lifetime as a Canes fan that we are like 3-47, which I just made up that number, in primetime games. And the only three wins that I can think of is Ja'Cory Harris on Labor Day night at FSU. And then the Virginia Tech and Notre Dame from 2017. I can't think of any in between that we won like primetime national stage night game. I mean, maybe you guys can help me think of more, but like you said, man, we just like crap our pants whenever the spotlight's on us. And it's just embarrassing. Like, there's no reason for guys my age to be confident about this game, because we've always crapped our pants in this scenario.
No, you're right. I mean, like, there's some night games that I can think of. You know, some Thursday night games, maybe, like at Virginia Tech a couple years ago with Duke Johnson, where he had that, you know, that route that he turned back on the linebacker. Thursday at North Carolina that one time, you know, with the blocked field goal right before the half and, just coming back. So that's a Thursday night win. There's another couple, you know, Thursday and Friday night wins and everything. But, like, you know, yeah, Saturday night, 8 p.m., ABC National. Yeah. Nah, that's – I mean, what you said is pretty much the list.
Yeah.
I really can't think of any other – I remember a Thursday night game, I think it was, against Cincinnati when we were at home and we lost. Or I don't know if that was a Thursday night game, but
– it was a Thursday night on the road in Cincinnati when I wrote the best – one of the best – my favorite pieces ever. I think it was literally – was it 16 words, I want to say, for the recap? that night, because I was just like, I'm not gonna invest this mental energy to like sit here and like write a recap. We lost. Yeah. It sucked. You saw it. We'll talk later. Bye.
That's perfect. That's perfect. Okay, so Christian Williams is in the transfer portal, and Jordan, actually, you asked this to our last guest, and I thought it was really great. Why don't you go ahead with this?
Yeah. So I'm kind of freaking out. I am one of the fans that like I'm a long term fan, you know, I'm the kind of guy that geeks out like making NBA rosters as a general manager. So I'm looking at the salary cap. I'm planning 4 years ahead when certain contracts are coming off the books. Like, that's how I think about roster management. Okay. I'm kind of already in panic mode when it comes to recruiting corners, because we have 21 of 24 spots already committed in this class. We only have 5 scholarship cornerbacks right now. Only 3 of them have game experience, and Ivy and Tecori Couch really are not solid in a starting role. Neither of them are. I'm waiting for one of those guys to really step up and, you know, take command of that spot opposite Blades. Like, how are we going to fix this roster? You know, like, we only have 5 guys, 5 guys under scholarship. We have 2 committed. Both guys, our last guest referred to as projects, Tim Burns and Malik Curtis. I am very worried about where we go from here. I mean, we're going to have to dip into next year's scholarship pool if there's not a rule change, because, I mean, we still got to get a quarterback. We're leaving spots open for, you know, big name guys like Ja'Cory Brooks. Is that his
name? He's not coming.
No. Okay. Yeah, we had someone tell us that there could be a chance, but... but you know, who knows, but we're leaving spots open for certain guys, you know, Tyreek Sapp, Jalen Hood, like, who knows?
Well, and see, the thing about leaving spots open is, for guys of that caliber, you're going to figure it out. You know, if Ja'Cory Brooks does change his mind and he wants to come to Miami, then you're going to have to make a hard phone call to somebody else and say, son, maybe you need to red shirt, gray shirt, whatever it is, but like,
not coming.
Everybody's All-American wants to be here. So, that's where that comes from. In terms of the number management in the class, you're really only holding open a spot for a quarterback right now.
Yeah.
Because everybody else is best available or upgrade on who's in the class. And again, you can figure out ways to move things around, because Jason Marshall says he wants to come to Miami, hypothetically, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to say, I have 2 cornerbacks committed, and I had this scholarship slot allocated elsewhere. No. Yes, Jason, thank you very much. Cool. Yep. And then you go back into the war room. You go back with the coaches and say, okay, now what do we got to do, and who we got to move, or who we got to talk to? So that's kind of the way that I look at it. Now, in terms of addressing the elephant in the room, which is the dearth of talent at cornerback, the only way that you're going to get to where you want to be is by throwing numbers at the problem. Okay, yeah. So you tried to do that with 2-2 in the last 2 years, okay, of cornerbacks. So you had Christian Williams and Tecori Couch last year. You had, you know, a couple coming in this year. And, you know, you try to stack them on top of each other, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, for whatever reason, the Christian Williams get did not help address the issue.
Yeah,
he wasn't a fit. He didn't work. I don't know. But you're talking, you have coaches talking about what happens on Green Tree is what earns you on the field, which is to me saying there was some work that needed to be done over on that side and it didn't get done. And it wasn't to the level of standard of excellence that needs to be, especially on this defense, which has been championship caliber for years.
Yeah.
So now he decided to leave out. There's no other option but putting numbers there.
Yeah.
And yes, I agree. Malik Curtis and Tim Burns, in terms of being college level cornerbacks, are developmental players who are going to take a mango season or two before they're game ready. I personally still believe that Malik Curtis should play offense, but I've been saying that since the first time I looked at his film, and it looked like he was running in fast forward when everybody else was in slow motion. But hey,
yeah,
maybe that's just me. Either way, you still got to find a way to put numbers at that problem. So if you got to short another position, if you say, hey, look, maybe one of them linebackers, you can say, okay, can we gray shirt for a year? Can you take a time off or whatever? Or somebody else at another position so I can get three or maybe four in this class? Cool.
Yeah.
But the thing for me also is it is past time that we have a real conversation about Mike Rumpf and recruiting. Because we've written it at State of the U. I forget if it was Marsh or somebody else. Every year he's been here, there's been a late cycle ad right before National Signing Day, whether it was Javonte Dean, whether it was Isaiah Dunson, whether it was Christian Williams before he just transferred out, whomever, every single year there's been a guy that we get late to kind of help boost the position group to where it was. But we need to start talking about why are we going shopping late? Because we're missing on everybody early. We're looking for alternate options because the number one, two, three, four, five, six options in every class are going elsewhere. That has to be the point of conversation. And if your job is supposed to be both talent acquisition and player development, okay, you have to do both. And Mike Rumpf is getting by with the skin of his teeth in the terms of player acquisition by getting somebody late. Now you got these guys leaving too. And if we're looking at DJ Ivy, and I hate to keep throwing him under the bus, but you got to play better, buddy. So now your player development is starting to lack too. Why am I keeping you around if you cannot get the players that we need, nor can you develop the players that we have to be the level that we need? Why?
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, you're bringing. I love the points that you're making because this is what specifically. I mean, Jordan has as you're talking Jordan's language, and I completely agree with what you're saying. I want to ask you one more recruiting question. How is it that we can get these safeties like Avante Williams, James Williams, Jalen Harrell, but not that same level at cornerback?
I mean, you got to look at what we're doing recruiting wise. And I know that there's some people who are going to say, okay, Bonda recruits everybody in the defensive backfield. So then you got to if Bonda is recruiting corners and safeties, it's been demonstrated over time that the cornerback part of that recruiting is not to the standard. So take him off of that and put somebody else. Now, if it is Mike Rumpf who's not recruiting corners, why are you not recruiting your own position, first of all?
Yeah.
And secondly, then get out there and get the job done. Now, if it is Mike Rumpf, then again, the cornerback recruiting is not to the standard. So, like, you have a first-round NFL draft pick in Mike Rumpf, who won a national championship here, was a first-round NFL draft pick, you know, and I believe played in the Super Bowl, I want to say. And he's put guys into the league, you know, helped develop guys, you know, when they're cross-training and even at cornerback. But that's not connecting enough. That's not getting the job done. So then we need to find somebody that can do it, you know. And look, all these guys who are going elsewhere, they're household names. And they go from high school being household names, and they become household names at the college level. And then they become top three round draft picks, except for Tarvis McFadden because he was undrafted because, well, he was boxing the hips and not that good. But, I mean, everybody else, it's not like they're going elsewhere and then flaming out. You know what I mean? It's not like a running back going to Timbuktu University and being like, damn, I should have went to Miami. Nah, they're going to other places. They're still becoming superstars. So if the path that way forward is clear for them, why would they deviate to go to Miami? And I don't think that whomever is recruiting cornerbacks is giving them an appropriate reason to stick around, whereas at safety, I think that the opposite is true.
Yeah. Well, I heard a point, it would have been over a year ago probably, and I think it was the Orange Bowl boys that made this point. I could be wrong there, though. It goes along with what you're saying, and it's no matter who is doing the recruiting for cornerbacks, at the end of the day, they come on campus and they meet who their position coach is going to be. Like, you can't hide Mike Rumpf forever. You know what I mean? Right. Eventually, these kids are going to have interactions with Mike Rumpf and decide if they want to play for him or not. And you have to think that that's important. So, I mean, like you said, we really just need to assess this overall situation. And, you know, why are we missing the guys like Jason Marshall? Why is it that we look like the kid who got, you know, the only kid who didn't end up with a prom date? That's kind of how we are in recruiting cornerbacks every single cycle. And it's just, it's killing me, man. And you know, we had a guy, he was on our podcast, Steven Ortiz. You know, he has South Florida ties. He's committed to Minnesota. Great young player, highly ranked. I think he's the 14th ranked corner in the country in this recruiting class. The kid was all but begging for a Miami offer. Grew up a Miami fan, wearing Miami, you know, like clothing and the logo to his high school in Arizona. Even while we're disrespecting him by not offering him, not giving him any love, and he's like showing love. And, you know, I know for a fact that he got one phone call from Mike Rumpf. That's it.
Well, and, you know, the thing about it is you have to make tough choices in recruiting. You do. We've talked about it a million times. Everybody's spoken about it. There's, a, you know, infinite number of players who are Miami caliber in South Florida every year, but you can only take 25 in a recruiting class. So there's going to be guys who, for whatever reason, I mean, if you look in this class, Yo'Keith Brown, that's a name that people keep bringing up. Which wide receiver are you going to drop for Yo'Keith Brown? Because for me, I'm not going to drop any of them. But could he play at Miami and be good at Miami? Absolutely. We just don't have room. You know what I mean? And maybe that's what happened with the Ortiz kid. You say, okay, we're going to allocate those resources elsewhere. Maybe it's once bitten, twice shy. John Richt and Mark Richt spending all of that time and all of those man hours on that private jet going up to Oregon to try to recruit Michael Johnson Jr. only for to see him go somewhere else. So I say, okay, we're not going to go to the West Coast like that. You know, we're going to find a Keyshawn Smith late who's like, yes, I want to be in. I can be there literally tomorrow kind of a thing versus, okay, I'm going to recruit this kid. I'm going to go out to the game. I got to fly out there when I could spend, you know, half of the money, half of the time and see, you know, it, you know, whatever percentage of four stars and five stars in the Southeast. I can see, you know, I can see 12 players in a weekend by going to four games in South Florida as opposed to, you know, flying out west for that one kid. And maybe that was a cost-benefit analysis that was done. But the thing about it is, if you're not going to get those other guys, if you don't do the work to secure that commitment, then like, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face because you're saying, okay, cool, there's this four-star kid who could play here. He's an All-American level talent. He's a blue-chip recruit, and he wants to be here or wants to at least be connected in the recruiting process, and we're electing go elsewhere. I mean, that's all well and good, but if you don't get any of those guys that you're recruiting instead of him, then you have to question the decision-making process as well. So, I mean, there's a lot going on, and it's not easy, but, like, the result just has to be better. And
agreed.
If you know, we're talking during the Al Golden era about defense, and we said defense has to be better. You know, whatever the chapter and verse is, come hell or high water, what we're seeing is not good enough and it has to be better. Mark Richt comes in, bring in Manny Diaz, we change the defense, boom. Now, during the Mark Richt era, and even up to last year, we're saying, look, the offense is the thing that has to be better. And moves were made eventually across those two regimes to try to address that. But in terms of recruiting cornerbacks specifically, everybody can clearly see we are not have the kind of players or the amount of players on this roster that we need. So the job of recruiting is not being done to the level it needs to be done, but the change has not been made. Yeah. And that's the frustrating part.
Agreed. I completely agree. And, you know, I feel like this was an issue because I remember back in February, I was freaking out about this. I was talking about this on the Fours Up podcast. It was probably coinciding with Trajan Bandy declaring early. When I started freaking out and I'm like, holy crap, we have a huge problem at corner, you know, and then it died down and now it's back up again because we're seeing some roster movement at that spot. It's not like it was good at any point this offseason. Like the, you know, this was a huge red flag going into this year and now it's only getting worse and I just don't even know what to do, man. But you're right. I mean, we need to see a change there. You know, and like you said, it doesn't matter if it's Rumpf or somebody else. we, you know, the guys on the inside need to address this problem and own up to the fact that we are in a very bad situation because of their mistakes.
Yeah, and I mean, like, this is a thing that I've written about and spoken about before. If you don't remember, when Craig Kuligowski was here coaching defensive line, we were missing a lot of guys. And then I wrote about, okay, we need to do different, maybe get him some help on the trail, things like that. He left. We changed the defensive line coach a couple of times, but we've seen how that has developed because there was an issue and then changes were made. Okay, now he decided to leave because, you know, it's easy to coach guys up because you want to coach guys up and everything. But like going out to get – when you're at Alabama, you have other guys who can go do the shopping for you. All you got to do is put the gourmet ingredients together. Now you're at Miami, you got to do the shopping yourself, and that's a little bit of a different proposition. And maybe he wasn't in for that. But you have other guys. Now you change that after a, you know, saying that that was an issue because it was an issue. Now you've changed the paradigm there. You've changed the coach a couple few times. You still are recruiting to the level that you should be recruiting the defensive line for Miami. But through that entire time, cornerbacks have been barely to the standard, if that. And now, like I said, we only have 5 scholarship cornerbacks and only 3 who have really taken a competitive snap in a game. And we're going up against a team that has a fast quarterback. So you got to pay attention to that. You got a very fast running back. And I mean, look, Tutu Atwell already ran around and threw the whole defense last year. And you got 2 other receivers who are doing numbers for them as well. And now, what I mean, we're going to walk a safety down. Now, maybe we could. Bubba Bolden and Gervin Hall, they have, you know, coverage abilities, but we're going to now take people from their number one positions and try to put them in other positions to cover the deficiency of talent at cornerback. Do we not see how that's a problem?
Yeah, well, and you know, some people talked about moving Bubba Bolden. Sorry, Marsh, I know I've been hogging a little bit.
No, you're good. You're good. I'm just getting worried for this team.
You know, so people have talked about moving Bubba Bolden into coverage. But I don't know if people watch, but it's not like Amari Carter was missing assignments and gaps and taking bad angles. I don't want to take a position of strength and dilute it.
I mean,
sense. But I mean, you have to do what you have to
do. You got to do what you got to do, you know, and we have guys who can play safety. We got multiple guys who can play safety. And there were multiple snaps in the opener when you had Gervin Hall, Bubba Bolden, and Amari Carter on the field together. If you got to do that, you got to do that because those are 3 future NFL players. And I've been saying that if this is a position of strength, I think this is the strongest position on the defense this year, especially with Russo out. Otherwise, I would say defensive end. But with him out, even though the defensive ends are the 1A or the number 2 for me, I think the safety has that kind of talent. And then you add in the talent behind those guys as well, you know, yeah, you got to put the best 11 out there. And if that 11, you know, includes 3 safeties and all 3 of them and, you know, moving around who plays where and walking, you know, whomever down or out or whatever it is, then you got to do whatever you got to do. But, you know, I'm past the point of caring about your feelings.
Yeah.
It's about getting the job done. Yeah. And if you're not about this work to get that job done, then with all due respect, I'm going to go find somebody who can get the job done. And if you want to be hurt about it, that's on you. Yeah. But I'm trying to win these games. Why? Because it's about this you. And if you're not good enough to be out there right now, then instead of talking about the coaches are hating or politics or da-da-da-da, maybe you need to get in tune with your star player in the mirror and talk to yourself and say, hey, self, maybe I need to stay after. Maybe I need to find somewhere to run sprints. Maybe I got to do some push-ups in my dorm room. Maybe I got to get in the hallway of whatever dorm I live in and do some sideways shuffles so I can get my hips or whatever I got to do.
Yeah.
To get on that field as opposed to saying, the world's against me. Fine, we're the Miami Hurricanes. The world's against us all the time. You're going to be with us on this side, or you're going to be somebody inside of our building talking about, oh, we're against us as well? Nah, man. I'm not about that life. If you're not about that life, just like Ed Reed said, if you're not about that work, you don't want to be here, we'll find somebody who's here. That's it.
Woo! Woo! All right, I'm ready to go do some up-downs or something.
That's real. Like, especially – and everybody listening to this, honestly, you know this. It's always been the Miami Hurricanes against the world. Everybody hates us.
Yeah.
We're the dynasty that was never supposed to be. Within a 40-year span, we won 5 championships. Honestly, could have 7 or 8 if things broke differently, or if Terry Porter, the alum of that other school in the state, South of Michigan, didn't screw us out of that championship. We would have had at least 6. You know what I mean? Like, it's always been us or the world against us. I don't need anybody in the Hecht Athletic Center or the Sulphur Practice Facility or whatever, the Dwayne Johnson locker room, meeting room. I don't need anybody inside of that unit, of that place, against us also. Because everybody on the outside is all of the time. So either you're all in with us, or with all due respect, you can GTFOH, because I don't need you here if you're not here with us. Because every time that we go out, every time we wear orange, green, white, whatever color jersey, everyone is against us. So we have to be together.
Yes, sir. I love it. Absolutely. I love it. I love it. Okay. All right. I need to ask you about the linebackers. Okay. So I rewatched the game on Friday, I believe it was, and love him to death. Zach McLeod looks slow. And and Brad Jennings, he's a sure tackler, but he's kind of slow. What are your thoughts on the linebacker position? Do you think Sam Brooks should get the start? Or, I mean, just because this is a fast-paced offense, you know, they love they're going to run a sideline to sideline. They're going to use Tutu on those jet sweeps. They're going to run Hawkins to the outside. How are you feeling about the linebackers? And, I mean, do you want to see Sam Brooks get more playing time?
I want to see Sam Brooks and Avery Huff get more playing time because we need that athleticism out there. That's the thing that we've all talked – I mean, you and I talked about this when we got those wings and we're talking about entourage. Look, man, the linebacking core is so much more athletic, to sound like Magic Johnson. We're more athletic this year, right? We're faster this year. And we're playing guys who are not, but we have guys who are – you know what I mean? We're playing guys who are slow as, you know, the – I mean, Pinckney was quick but not fast. And then Quarterman, he was just – I mean, he started 97 games at Miami, so he knew all the tendencies of everybody, and that made him play a little bit faster, which is great because Shaq Quarterman was great here. But then you got guys who are that kind of same foot speed but not as mentally quick, which then slows down their play on the field a little bit. And that's going to be key this week particularly. You know what I mean? We need that foot speed because, like, we're going to have to be able to get there. Whatever linebacker is, I mean, on the field side, the wide side – you know what I mean? And then you're going to have to chase a jet sweep or get out there to a bubble screen or whatever that they're doing. You got to be able to move. And, yeah, I think that Zach McLeod and Bradley Jennings Jr., while being very stout against the run for the most part, they even missed some run fits in the opener. But, you know, they were pretty good against the run. If you're going to play in space, then I need some guys who can move a little bit more. So I don't really care if it's 9 or 6, that being Huff or Brooks, but – I need to see one or both of them out there a lot because they're going to have to run. You know, it's just going to be that kind of thing. They're going to have to move.
Yeah. I was like almost because I've been very hyped on McLeod coming back for his senior year. And I think I was more excited on the level of, you know, him being a positive influence in the locker room and just a veteran guy and things like that. I didn't really take into instance that, I mean, he missed a few tackles there early on and he just didn't look quick, but we talk about the linebackers every damn episode on here.
Well, but also UAB did run all kinds of misdirection, and that is for the specific reason to make you a half step slower because you're thinking and okay, you know, like you got a jet sweep or you got jet motion and then that guy goes and then you reset, but then you're coming back the opposite way with orbit motion. Then you're going inside zone or you're looking like it's going to go outside zone to this side, but then you're actually running, a triple option because you got the outside zone going left and then you pull it and then you got a option going this way, but then you got receivers going this way. So there's a lot for them to process. And I think that was what could have affected, and I think it did affect, the fact that at least early – they were a half step slow because it's like there's so much window dressing going on. And that's going to be a thing again this week. So, you know, we'll see. But I think that maybe that also mitigated some of the quickness that they can play with because they had to diagnose what was actually happening.
Yeah. Yeah. That's totally understandable. Okay. So let's switch sides of the ball. I knew that it was going to be sloppy just being at the first game. I was very, very impressed by the run game and, you know, the totals of that. Passing game, you know, De'Aaron King, he did what he had to do, and we got 31 points. And I don't think Canes fans are really understanding what a big deal 31 points is. But Jordan, you know, he thought it was a little sloppy, and so did I. I think we were both in the same boat there. What did you think about the new Rhett Lashley offense? I know we've talked about it all offseason, but, I mean, we've been asking for this for 15 years. And you can ask Jordan, because we watched the game together. When we were getting up to the line and running these plays, I was like, oh, my God. Like, this is this is unbelievable. Like, this is what we've been waiting for.
What were your thoughts on the offense? And then do you think we're going to see more of the playbook this Saturday? And do you see kind of the, you know, the same performance on Saturday?
I mean, in general, it's, again, that spread system that I, too, have been hoping for many a year. So seeing it actually run is a great thing. You know, the tempo was good. We ran more plays. I think we ran like 78 plays, and I think the high last year was 67. So you're already increasing that number, which is good. You have, you know, some good performance in the run game, just to kind of lean on that. That was kind of a game of staples, if you will. So we're going to run what we run, and we're going to run it all the time, basically. I saw Danny Gould, you know, he charts the games and puts up stats. Like, we ran in our zone read 22 times, and Derek King kept zero of them last week. You know, and that was because, you know, UAB kind of played it neutral and just like, hey, like, I'll take 4 yards by giving it to the running back, you know, and it doesn't look sexy, but 4 yards a carry all the way down the field and you score a touchdown. You know what I mean? So there's going to be wrinkles. You know, you're going to eventually see Derek King keep the ball on a zone read, and then you're going to build off of that into the triple. And actually, you almost made it into, no, we saw it because on the one where he overthrew Jeremiah Payton butt naked wide open in the end zone. You remember that one where he was rolling out and the cornerback rolled up and then he was wide open. And then I guess, yeah, I mean, he sailed that way. He just completely and totally missed a wide open throw. And sometimes that happens, but that was the one play that you could see off of the base offense that was a little bit of a wrinkle. So that's going to be a thing. And then also just, I don't even need dynamicism out of the passing game. I just need better production. It could be even kind of pedestrian. I'll take 9.5 yards of completion with 12 yards an attempt, you know, which is a step forward from where it was. But yeah, I mean, missing quite a couple throws or open opportunities in the passing game, that's the thing that's going to need to update. And yeah, we're not going to be able to just to lean on the same five plays, especially in the run game like we did against UAB, just because it came to a point where they just couldn't stop it. But no, I'm a fan of the offense. I like just the fact that we're running this kind of a scheme, but there's still room for improvement and development. And I hope that that, you know, is what we see coming on, you know, Saturday evening.
Okay. And I got to ask you about the wide receivers. I have been, Jordan and I are the presidents of the D Wiggins fan club. But other than him, we've been a little bit more skeptical on, you know, guys like Pope. I'm honestly a little skeptical on Payton. I think a lot of people are putting junior, senior year expectations upon a redshirt freshman. And he has the talent to put up some great numbers, especially in this offense. How do you grade the receivers from last week, and are you skeptical about that unit moving forward? Do you want to see more true freshmen, you know, in that rotation early and getting, you know, looks? So how do you feel about the wide receivers?
I mean, obviously it wasn't great because the passing game wasn't great. So, you know, you can't only throw for 144 yards and then look at them as great. Plus the fact, you know, Brevin Jordan had 51 yards receiving. So you're talking 80 something for everybody else, and then Cam Harris, as I'm thinking, he had that dump off pass. So you're only talking about 50, 60 yards receiving from the wide receiving core at the University of Miami. Oh. That's not good enough. You
Holy
know, when you,
shit.
Yeah. Well, quick math there, right? And then all of a sudden you're like, you know, yeah, you're in the 60s, maybe in the 70s for like how many yards the wide receivers had. No, that's not good enough. And you know, like, yes, And it's funny, I was going to say it, but I didn't want to interrupt you. So it's just you and Jordan in the D. Wiggins fan club, right? It's just a two-seater?
Yeah, there's only two of us.
I mean, but no, I mean, he's made some plays, but I mean, I need everybody to step up. I need, you know, guys to really grow up, or I need other guys. And honestly, like, if we're seeing all this stuff and hearing all this stuff about my guy, Keyshawn Smith, learn the name, and Xavier Restrepo doing all kinds of things out of the slot, and you know, within the run game, he even had an 80-yard touchdown, you know, a run in a scrimmage, and like you see them celebrating and all these kind of things. You know, you see Michael Redding III, who's the biggest physical guy in the wide receivers room as a true freshman. You know, you keep seeing and hearing about them doing things, but we don't see them anywhere on the depth chart. You know, and people are like, oh, we're playing a walk-on and everything. Marshall Few was a preferred walk-on, but he was also an 1,100-yard receiver and first-team All-State in high school. So that's a guy with plenty of talent. So, like, don't think that this is some kind of Jimmy Murphy charity case kind of a thing. You know, he's a good locker room guy. Like, no, Marshall Few has skills. But just on the other side of that, like,
Jimmy's going to haunt your dreams now.
He absolutely will not, because I don't think about him, and I won't think about him after this. But my point is, if the guys at the top of the rotation are not doing the job, then I think that we need to look at somebody else. And there's numbers and talent in those numbers elsewhere. So unlike cornerback, where if the guys at the top of the rotation are not doing the job, then we got to go pull somebody from a different position. If the guys at wide receiver are not doing the job, then we look at the next person on the depth chart and the next person on the depth chart. And hey, look, maybe we steal jobs. You know what I mean? Amon Richards stole job and then had what? A record-setting freshman season. I'm not saying that any of these freshmen are going to have that, but let those young ones get out there. And it's one of those things where these young guys are probably – they don't even have fear because they don't even know what that is. You know what I mean? It's just like a thing where, like, cool, I'm going to go out and make plays. It's like, well, you have this big situation and blah, blah. It's like, no, I'm just going to run my route, and then whatever's going to happen, irregardless. Oh, that's a Miami word. I'm sorry. You know, irrespective of anything else, I'm not paying attention to all the other constructs around it. I'm just going to go out there and make a play because I'm young and that's what I'm here to do and not necessarily think about the larger thing. You tell me what to do, coach, and I'm going to go get that job done. And then the coach can think about the wider scope of things. But, like, yeah, I mean, Mike Harley – had a nice catch, you know, made a guy miss, you know, a couple things on the day. Mark Pope, I would definitely like to see more from him because I've been singing his praises for years.
He fumbled punt, and he was definitely a 5-star recruit. So
I mean, look, I never wanted him to be on punt return. And this is funny, like way back in the day when Philip Dorsett was here, I had two tweets back to back, and I said, like or retweet this tweet if you think that Philip Dorsett should be the punt returner. And I waited a minute, and then I followed that up with dot, 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 so I can block you because you're stupid. And Philip Dorsett actually popped in my mentions, or he quote tweeted me and LOL'd me and called me stupid or whatever. Shut up, Google. And then, like, other people, like, and then finally he was taken off the punt return, and then Stacey Coley housed one the next game. Yeah. And I'm like, that's who I wanted out there, or like the kind of thing. And I think because Philip Dorsett was better as a kickoff returner. And I think the same thing is true with Mark Pope. I think that if you give him a kickoff return kind of a situation, he's better suited than that. But we have other guys who I think are better fit at punt returner.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Perfect. Okay. So my last question for you is I need your prediction, man. I need your prediction for this Saturday. I'm going 31-27 Canes. And I'm a little worried about it, but I do think that we can pull out a victory at the end. So let's hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think one sec. I'm back. my Google Home was being stupid and it's like yelling over my shoulder. I just had to tell it to stop. Because it's listening to me podcast, which hey, I guess happens. There are things to like. In terms of Miami versus Louisville. Louisville, I think Marshy tweeted it out, or it might have been Andrew Ferrelli, one of our new contributors, about how they're very small up front on defense. So if we're wanting to lean in the run game or find a way to run the ball, that's a thing that, you know, could lend itself positively to Miami, obviously, especially seeing what happened last week. Last time that we played last year, the quarterback set a Miami Hurricanes program record for touchdown passes. I don't know if it's the exact same defense, but that's another thing that, okay, passing opportunities are still going to be there. And if you look at their game against Western Kentucky, there were passing opportunities for that team as well. So passing opportunities are going to be there, but these are opportunities that you need to capitalize on. So that's only kind of half of the battle. In terms of defense, you know, Louisville's going to put up points. They are. And they do have a wide array of playmakers. It's really, to me, going to come down to who holds onto the ball. Because if whichever team wins the turnover battle is going to win the game. And I know Miami did not get a turnover last week, and hopefully we finally see whatever the new version of the turnover chain is on the road this week. But no, this is going back to what I was saying in every preview that I wrote and everything that I've said before during the original schedule. I said 7-5 and proved me wrong. With the updated schedule because of COVID, I said 7-4 and proved me wrong. And this is going to be one of the four. So I think that going in, Louisville is probably going to find a way to win. just because I don't trust this team. And I especially, like I said, because of that stat before, I don't trust this team on the road. And I need them to show me this year right now, or this week right now on Saturday night, that this is different. And until they do, I'm going to have to be the dissenting voice and think that Miami loses.
I don't blame you for saying that, man. I mean, I kind of want to say the same thing. But I got bitched at for not being positive. But on the podcast. But I think this game could go either way, man. These are the games that Miami has lost in the past 15 years. And that,
exactly.
And no other reason. Like, I mean, people always ask me on Twitter, like, oh, why do you have Miami losing? Because I don't have a reason. This is just Miami. This is just the Miami that I know. Like, I don't know the 2001, 2002 Canes that could go into Gainesville and kick ass. I don't know the teams that could go into Tallahassee. Well, I guess we kick the
I mean, that's not the tough proposition that it once was. But, I mean, I was a freshman in 2000. I know those teams. You know, I was there and I saw them with my own eyes. These guys aren't those.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, this Miami team is not that 2001 team, when it's, or, you know, 2000 even, outside of a trip to Washington, which started terribly. But if there was another quarter, we definitely would have won that game. But obviously you play, you know, the game and the construct that it is. But, yeah, this is not that. So we have to be realistic, and that's why I'm being pragmatic. Again, just like you're talking about, this is who Miami has been. This is what Miami has done. But, like I'm saying, I hope that they prove me wrong. I hope Derek King comes out and plays like 2018, Derek King. I hope that defense comes out with its hair on fire and gets four turnover chains. I hope that the running game still leans on guys. I hope that these wide receivers create separation, catch balls, and make plays after the catch. I want, you know, to make kicks, have great punts if we have to punt. I want all of those things to come together. I want it to be like that 2017 Notre Dame game, which, except for one drive, was a perfect game pitched on all three phases by the Miami Hurricanes. I want to see that happen. I just don't know if they can. And just like you're saying, they've proven actually over time that they cannot do that. So I'm going to think that they can't and hope that they prove me wrong. And this is the first step towards something big.
I hope you're right, man. You know, Marsh predicted a loss before the season to Louisville. I predicted a loss to Louisville in our reaction podcast to the UAB game, you know, because I was just a mess after that game. Thoroughly unimpressed. I don't know, man. I thought we looked very soft on defense in the first half. You know, I've rewatched the game since, and I felt a little more comfortable. I just there was just a few aspects of our performance that I just thought, like, this won't match up well against ACC opponents. I've softened on that a little bit, but I'm just saying, like you're, you know, I think we're all in the same group of people that are very, very cautious about this Louisville game for all the reasons that we've brought up today. I think my final prediction, because this is the last time, you know, you guys will hear from me on Fours Up until after the game is played, I think I'm going to go with 38-35 Miami, but I'm with you guys. This is like a coin flip game. Like, I will very much not be surprised if it's a Louisville win or a Miami win, or, you know, I'm actually thinking about, you know, this game might come down to the leg of Jose Borregales, which it's nice to have him in, you know, instead of other options that we've had in the past. So
facts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this game is one of those games that could define the season. I mean, if we win, then it gives us a whole bunch of confidence, especially going into FSU week, and the belief that we can, you know, rattle off 8-9 wins here in the regular season. Because I said 8-3, you said 7-4, Jordan says 9-2. I don't. This is a defining game, and I don't think people are taking it seriously enough. But, you know, that's Canes fans for you. But Cam, I can't thank you enough, man. I know I texted you a short notice, and
no,
I
just appreciate
you coming on the show. We got to have you on more, man. And so whenever, you know, whenever you have time and you want to hop on and talk some Canes and some Entourage, you know, we'd love to have you, man.
Nah, we'll save the Entourage for the off the mic chat, since we gave him plenty. But, you know, like I said, I appreciate you guys having me. Obviously, you guys are doing a great job if nobody else says that. And I know that lots of people are saying that. And, you know, I see the numbers that you put up on Twitter and, you know, the rankings and everything. So congratulations on the success so far. You know, guys, keep pushing. Obviously, go Canes, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, all thanks right, again, Cam. Good,
man. Take care.
Yep. No worries. See ya.
Yeah. Cool, man. Wow. Always love having Cam on. He's
love him.
Incredible in every way. You know,
he's awesome, dude. He has, like, just a little shout out to Cam. That dude has helped me so much over the past few years, like with State of the U and things like that. Like, he's the best. I love him.
Cool. Yeah, I really need to make an effort to get to know him better. You know, I've only chatted a few times with him. All of them have been media related in terms of doing podcasts or, you know, video broadcasts or stuff like that with him, but he definitely knows more than I ever will about Miami football, and he just seems like a good dude. Like, he's a guy that I want to get to know on a personal level, you know.
Absolutely. And he shares a lot of the same thoughts as we do as well. I mean, he predicted a loss.
You mean correct thoughts, Marsh? Yes. If we think them, then they are law, right? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, I mean, he predicted a loss, and you can't really blame him for doing that. I think a lot of people are under the assumption, for some damn reason, that this is going to be the same game as last year, and we're going to win 52-21 or 52-27, whatever it was, and wake up!
That was a statistical outlier.
This isn't some la-di-da fantasy world where the 2001 Canes are running through the goddamn tunnel. Like, wake up and realize that this is going to be a close game and a game that Miami very well could lose. I don't think we're going to lose, but it very well could happen. Very well could happen. There's a reason why we are now the underdogs going into Saturday. So
I think it's in the top three most losable games on our schedule.
Yes.
I think this is a more losable game than Virginia Tech right now.
I don't disagree with you, honestly. I really, really do not. Just because it's early in the season, we're still trying to work out some depth chart issues, and they have a fast as hell offense. And so Canes fans don't be idiots.
And we have a slow as hell defense.
Slow as hell front seven, that's for sure. I don't know, man. Like, Canes fans need to wake up and be rational and go into this game. Don't lose your goddamn mind I'm sorry I'm cursing too, but don't lose your mind if we get behind or if we lose. Like, just, like, don't go crazy on Twitter asking for the firing of one person or the firing of another. Like, just go into the game with an open mind. This is our first real test of the season. And let's come out with a dub, man. If we come out with a W when we record on either Saturday or Sunday, I'll
feel good.
Tell you how happy, how thankful I will be if we come out of Louisville, Kentucky with a win on Saturday. And hey, this guy just offered me tickets. I may be there. I may just say, screw it. I'm going to Kentucky.
Dude, just start driving. Start driving. You can make it.
Yeah. That's not a bad idea.
If you leave right now, you might make it.
If I leave right now, I could make it. But yeah, just be smart about this game, and don't be stupid. And I loved this episode. Matt was a great guest. Cam was great as always. And man, I'm excited for Saturday. Let's kick off, man. Let's go. I'm ready to freaking.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I could run faster to the running backs than McLeod and Jennings right now. I'm ready to go.
Yeah. You know, so this Louisville game, like, the UAB game is one where style points mattered to me. Like, I was very interested to see what we looked like and then wanted to project that across the season. I know it was game one. Things change. You know, people settle and get more comfortable, stuff like that. But I think it's important to watch that first game for potential storylines, you know, because not everything we saw will last throughout the season, but some of those things will, you know, some of these problems that we saw in game one, we will have all season.
And that's important for guys like me and you to pick up on because, I mean, we talk about this stuff, right? And so style points really mattered to me in that UAB game. It was a game that we had no business losing, and so mostly you're just going to critique the performance. I don't care how we win this Louisville game. I just want to see a win.
Yeah. Like, I don't care if we win 10-7.
Yeah. There's very few scenarios.
Yeah, I will be so fine if we win 13-10 on Saturday.
Yeah.
I will be telling every Louisville fan to, you know, kiss my ass. Like, I will be so happy with any kind of win on Saturday.
Yeah, there's very few instances that I will nitpick in this game. I'm desperate for a win here. I really think we need it. I think the program needs it so that we can stop getting embarrassed on a national stage. It's not fun.
It really isn't. And this game is could be our coming out party, man, or it could be just the national media saying, oh, it's just the regular old, you know, Miami Hurricanes the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And I don't get why you, me, and Cam are the only ones that recognize this.
I think everyone just has a short memory, man. You know, because like I said, like we talked about this cornerback problem back in February. I mean, I was probably one of the loudest people about it, but it was there when Trajan Bandy declared. Everyone kind of freaked out, and then we forgot about it until now.
Yeah, I just some Canes fans just make me very, very upset and makes me wish that we all thought the same. But we wouldn't be a family if we didn't. So, or if we did. So. All right, man. Is there anything else that we have to get to?
No, just go Heat.
We're getting our ass kicked right now, but yeah.
I think you said
a little foreknowledge.
Yeah, I think I took on all of Heat Twitter in the last 2 days, so very controversial figure by.
But if we lose tonight, then we go to game three. We're on to game three, and more importantly, man, we are on to Louisville. Beat Louisville, please, for the love of God. Just beat Louisville. Please.
Beat Louisville.
Beat Louisville. All right, buddy. Okay, I will talk to you. We will talk to you guys either on Saturday or Sunday. So until then, go Canes and beat Louisville.
Go Canes.
This has been the Forza Podcast.